It's Brother Hanson from Truth Life Ministries here in Lakeside, Arizona. It's good to be here with you today. We're going to get back into our study on the patriarchs, and I hope you're enjoying this. Now, we mentioned yesterday a little bit about the Book of Laws in the Southern Kingdom when they busted apart. They had its own, they had their own religious problems. In time, people grew away from the tradition of worship and sacrifice in the temple and instead began to worship at another altar and were even known to honor a pagan god in the Jewish temple. In the year 621, during the reign of King Josiah, word circulated that a priest named Hilkiah had discovered an old law book in the temple. When Josiah read the book and realized how God's laws had been ignored, he launched a series of sweeping reforms. He reinstated the old religious practices and festivals, destroyed the pagan shrines, and finally assembled the people of Judah to listen to the laws and to renew their ancient covenant with God. It is possible that Josiah's influential law book was an early version of the Book of Deuteronomy, in which Moses, in his farewell address, instructs the people on the code they shall live by. The theme of the book is the reaffirmation of the special covenant between God and his people. And one of the basic laws governing that relationship is that all worship must be centralized in one place. Deuteronomy is written in the same style as the early historical books of the Bible, Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings, which in the traditional division of the Hebrew Bible are called the former prophets. The language in these books is similar, and a continuous story is told from the death of Moses to the devastation of Judah by Babylon. The entire history of that period is told from a religious perspective. Events are narrated and kings are rated according to how faithful they are to the laws of Deuteronomy. In 1 and 2 Kings, the Deuteronomist historian, as the anonymous writers of the historical books are collectively known, points to the dividing of the kingdom as evidence of the rebelliousness of the covenant people. Subsequently, the good kings are those descended from David who maintain Jerusalem as one center of worship. The northern kings, having their own center of worship, are inevitably found wanting. There is an undeniable southern bias in this history. And the historian points to the Assyrian conquest of Israel in 722 as confirmation of the northern kingdom's evil ways. Dispersed by these Assyrians, the people of the north eventually lose their identity and are assimilated by other cultures. They are popularly known as the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Judah also suffers exile at the hands of the Babylonians, but the Judeans are able to maintain their identity and traditions until they can return and rebuild Jerusalem. The historian points to their survival as evidence that they were more faithful to the covenant. Another version of the history of the divided kingdom is found in 1 and 2 Chronicles and is part of the history that also includes Ezra and Nehemiah. Written after the Jews returned home from captivity in Babylonia. First and Second Chronicles are mainly concerned with the religious life of the restored nation. The history recounted in the books of Chronicles does not pay much attention to, and in fact largely ignores the history of the once powerful northern kingdom. The people like Daniel that went into exile came back just as faithful as he went in. Daniel, Meshach, Abednego, these were very dedicated people to God. And we find that they continued with their faith. Now, throughout the early books of the Old Testament are prophets of great faith. Abraham and Moses in particular were revealed as prophets who worked to carry out God's will and convey his covenants. Moses' prophetic vision allowed him to lead the people toward the creation of a kingdom of Israel. By the end of the 11th century BC, when Saul was anointed Israel's first king, prophecy had achieved a recognized role in Israel. There were various types of prophets. Prophets known as seers maintained religious shrines and made predictions for those who visited them. You know, we get the same thing, don't we? California prophets and whatnot. Seers, they call themselves. Now it's something else. It's just something to gain money most of the time. They put up these like little fruit stands or lemonade stands. Or, you know, you go in and they'll give you some good words or some predictions. And the more money you give them, the better they'll talk about you, the better they'll prophesy about you, and, you know, and you'll keep coming back. The seers maintained religious shrines and made predictions for those who visited them. And one such prophet was Samuel, who said to Saul, "I am the seer. Go up before me and up to the shrine, for today you shall eat with me, and in the morning I will let you go and will tell you all that is in your mind." Now, this was a true prophet of God. Don't get me wrong. Those claiming to be seers today that put up stands, most of the time their prophecies are not anything to come to pass. Now, there's many of the so-called prophets that people love, and you talk to them, and they have them on the payroll, just like a somebody that cleans the house or washes the car or whatever, cleans the pool. They find them necessary. They find them so necessary that they'll find the money to pay these people. But I'm not talking about a prophet such as Samuel. Samuel was a true prophet of God. And he said to Saul, "I am the seer. Go up before the shrine today and you shall eat with me. And in the morning I'm going to tell you all the things that's in your mind." 1 Samuel 9:19. Often seers lived and traveled in groups and prophesied from the depths of ecstatic trances, sometimes to the accompaniment of musical instruments. For example, when Saul was on the road to Gibeah, a band of prophets met him and the Spirit of God possessed him, and he fell into a prophetic frenzy along with them, 1 Samuel 10:10. After Samuel became the selector and anointer of kings, some prophets joined the court and began to act as counselors. Samuel himself advised Saul. Nathan advised David. Over time, the prophet's role of counselor developed, and prophets became important court functionaries. The prophets also served as guardians of the covenant. If the king broke the covenant, as we know from the cases of Saul was one of them that broke the covenant. And he killed 80 of the priests because he didn't like their answer that they told about David, concerning David. So he had him murdered. Saul was one of the worst. And David and Bathsheba, Ahab, Naboth, there were Nathan or an Elijah to criticize him. And in the traditional division of the Hebrew Bible, the early historical books, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings are called the former prophets, the books collectively known as the latter prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the 12 contain the pronouncements of those prophets who received the prophetic call after the kingdom was divided. It was with the latter prophets that what is thought of as the classical era of Israelite prophecy began. In all, writings of the latter prophets span about 400 years from 8th through the 5th centuries BC, beginning just before the northern kingdom fell to Assyrian armies. By the time of the Assyrian assault, the prophet Hosea complained that the population of the northern kingdom had turned from God and adopted the gods and worship practices of their Canaanite neighbors. Also in Judah, worship was at times corrupted by Assyrian influences. So when these people came in and took them over, they certainly caused them to backslide as well. They didn't keep their faith. They forgot the Mosaic law. As often as people forget God's covenant, the prophets were there to remind them, to reason with them, and to plead with them to avoid a future disaster that would surely come if they didn't change their current way of life. The latter prophets, to whom relatively long books are attributed, are referred to as the major prophets. They are Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. The others, known collectively as the 12, are called the minor prophets, as the they're called the minor prophets because of their brevity of their books. They are Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. The prophets came from many different walks of life. Isaiah is thought to have been of Jerusalem's upper classes, but Amos was from a tiny Judean village and referred to himself as herdsman and a dresser of sycamore trees, Amos 7:14. What united these men was that each had been called to carry God's messages and pronouncements. Their pronouncements often began with the words, "Thus saith the Lord." The calling was a responsibility that few could have wished on themselves, since it compelled them to speak harsh truths to common people and powerful rulers alike, about their flagging faith and the likely consequence of their mortal and religious negligence. No one wanted to listen. In fact, some of the prophets were thrown out of courts and places of worship, scorned and even threatened with death. The
the hell?
That if they mended their ways, they could save their nation from destruction. And I'm going to stop there because that we're out of time. Go to our website, krciradio.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know you're listening. And all these messages you'll find there. Write to us, KRCI Radio, Box 424, Lakeside, Arizona, 85929. Call us at 928-368-6766. Till tomorrow's broadcast, this is Brother Hanson saying, study to show yourself approved to God.